Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Mem Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 7 lines from the top of Daf Mem Gimel. At the outset, as we begin our shiur, it is likely that even though our shiurim are in the context of a daf yomi schedule, the nature of the material is such that as we proceed, we'll find it necessary to continue beyond the limitations of one daf. So that do not be surprised if you find that we continue till the end of Daf Mem, that is, till the end of the Perek, which you will find on Daf Mem Hei Omen Aleph. As things unfold, so this will become clearer. Now we turn to the Mishnah on Daf Mem Gimel Omen Aleph. We have been dealing up till now with someone that was Mudur Hano, but here we have a person, we'll call him an outsider, someone walking along, and Omar lo hashileni porascha, and he says to the owner of a cow, would you loan me your cow? Omar loi eino pnuyo. The owner of the cow says, it's not available. And Rashi adds here, demlachto hoyois, it was in the middle of doing some task, v'nisatzi v'shoyel k'neged amashel v'yoymer, and the potential borrower got very upset at the owner of the cow, and he said, "Hoyel v'serafto lashilo li koinum sode shani chayresh ba." And that's what you can see now. As the Mishnah continues, Omer, the passerby, says, "Oh, you're not loaning it to me. Then I impose a vow on myself, koinum sodi shani chayresh ba liolam. Then that I impose upon my field." That the use of the cow, the use of your cow, would involve me in violating a neder, a vow. So he imposed on himself this restriction that I'm never going to plow my field with your cow. And as Rashi says, "Koinim sodish ani choresh ba shelo echresh sodi before us choylomis." I'm never going to plow my field with your cow. And then the owner of the cow, at some point in the future, he loaned this guy the cow. What is the story? So now the Mishnah continues. Im hoya darkoi lachrosh. If the practice of this guy was for himself, he himself plowed his field. He wasn't a person that hired others. He would plow his own field. Then the result of this vow is who aser v'chol adam mutarim. The fellow himself cannot borrow the cow. However, someone else could plow the field with that cow. In other words, someone else could plow this guy's field with the cow. The point being that since he was accustomed to, the passerby was accustomed to plowing it himself, when he vowed as he did, his intention was quite personal regarding his own use of the cow in his field. But he did not have intention in the vow of excluding others from plowing his field with that cow. However, ve'im ein darkei lachrosh, if the passerby was not someone that ever plowed his field himself anyway, he would always hire others to do the work, then hu v'chol adam asurim, then he and all others are prohibited in using this cow for that field. Hamudar hano mechavero. And here we have a topic heading that accompanies this on the side. Under the nosei, it reads, Eza derech yeshlo lamadir hano lazor lamudar sheniklo lemetsuka. What solution is there for someone who imposed a vow prohibiting someone else, prohibiting his friend from benefiting from him, and that friend is in trouble, finds himself in trouble, so ein lo ma lechol, maybe he doesn't have anything to eat, ein lo mi she yitak ein lo tikunim techufim, or he needs some repairs, and he has no one that will help him in the repairs. Now the Mishnah continues. So we have a mudur hano mechavero, someone imposed a vow on someone else, the ein lo ma yochal, and now the person who is, we'll call the subject of the vow, has nothing to eat. The double underlining simply highlights the different situations. So, holech eitzel hachenvoni vioimer. The madir, the one who imposed the vow, goes to a shopkeeper, a grocer, vioimer, and he says, ish ploini mudor mimeni hano. So-and-so cannot benefit from me because of the vow that I made. Vieni yodeh ma'as, and I don't know what to do. The grocer takes the cue, and he will give food to the mudar, and the grocer will eventually receive payment for the outlay from the madir. Hoyo besoy livnos gidroi ligdor sodeu liktzor. The mudar had a house that needed building, needed repairs, a fence that needed to be repaired, a field that needed to be harvested, and he had no one to help him out. And the madir became aware of this. The madir, the one who initiated the vow, goes to workers and says to them, "Ish ploni mudar mimeni hano, so and so cannot benefit from me." He said, by virtue of the vow that I imposed, v'eini yodeh ma'es, and I don't know what to do. And they took the cue, v'ein oisini moi, they do the required work, v'uboin v'noitlim schar mizeh, and then they will come and take payment for their services from the madir. Hoyu mahalchin baderech, v'ein lo ma yochal. The mudar and the madir are walking along on a road, and there is no food. And the mudar has no food. Noisein liacher l'shum matana v'haloi mutar ba. The madir can give food to a third party, and he gives it to him as a gift, and the mudar can take that food from the third party, and that wouldn't be a violation of the vow. Im ein imoem acher, if there is no one else there. Meniach al hasela o al hagodir, the madir will put the food on a stone or on a fence, the yoimer, and announce, Arehein mufkorin l'chol mi shiachboitz. I declare this food unowned for anyone who wants to take it. V'halo notel v'yochel. And according to the first opinion of the Mishnah, the mudar can take it. He's not getting it directly from the madir. At the point that the madir declared it unowned, so it's unowned. It's not the madir's anymore. At least that's what the Tanakhama seems to say. So that when the mudar is taking it, he's not taking it from the madir. For Rabbi Yossi Oyser, Rabbi Yossi does not accept that. He doesn't allow that. The Rashi points out that when it says Rabbi Yossi Oser, it's referring to the case of the hefker and the subsequent putting of the food on the rock or on the fence. In the previous cases where the madir said, I don't know what to do, after becoming aware of the mudar's plight, the Mishnah gave a solution, and Rashi adds that the other approach that one might have thought wouldn't be allowed, and that is for the Madir to tell the Chenvani, oh, would you give so-and-so the required food, or to tell the workers, would you go help so-and-so in his repairs? That would not be allowed, because then they're functioning as an agent of the Madir, and there's a principle, Shlucho Shel Odom Kamoiso, the one's agent is as if he is the original party himself. And the Neder said that the Mudar is not to derive benefit from the Madir. The Gemara. And as you scan ahead with your eyes, you'll notice some markings. And by the way, if you're interested in accessing marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. You notice there is a bow tie shape that appears here. And you'll see another one appears on Omid Beis, on the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei Mivneh heading. These represent Te'omim, Lechumras Rabbi Yossi, explanations for Rabbi Yossi's restriction, She'oysu lemudu lehonos midivrei hamadir afilu achrei shehamadir hifkiram. Whereas even after the declared hefker, the mudar cannot benefit. So why is that? So that's what the bow tie shape will highlight in this Gemara. Another shape that we'll encounter are house markings. And these two house markings essentially highlight the Gemara's challenge, as we say, as we've written on the side, Kushios al Tamo shel Rabbi Yochanan. These are questions on the first reason given. So now the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, my taimo de Rabbi Yossi. Why is Rabbi Yossi restrictive in this case, where even though Hefker, the declaration of non-ownership, was made, the Mudar nevertheless cannot benefit? So the Gemara answers, Kosovar, and again, I emphasize, this is Rabbi Yochanan's explanation. So Kosovar means Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion, Hefker kematona, that Hefker works the same way a gift works. Ma matona ad asio mirushus noisein lirushus mekabel. Just like in the case of a gift, it's not a gift until it goes from the domain of the, whatever item is being given as a gift, goes from the domain of the owner to the receiver. In other words, it has to reach the receiver's possession in order for the gift to be called a gift. Af Hefker ad da'osi l'rishus zoicheb. So to Hefker doesn't take place, it doesn't become a reality until the one who takes it from Hefker actually accesses it, actually has it come into his domain. The Rashi says, and we can see this together by looking at Rashi on the second line under the Gemara text. Af hefker nami lo nofik mershus mafkir ad osli de zoche. So too, hefker doesn't leave the domain of the owner until it reaches the possession of the receiver, of the one who takes it. Hilkoch bahadi de shokil leheich me'al hasela. Therefore, in the case of the Mishnah, where the Mudar was picking it up from the rock, it's as if he's taking it from the possession of the Madir himself, and that is what makes it prohibited. Now the Gemara continues, and we raise a question on this explanation, and this is a question, a long question. It takes us to the third line from the top of Omid Beis. Mosiv Rabbi Abba, V'haloi noitel v'yoichel, Rabbi Yossi oser. This is a phrase or a paraphrase of what we saw in the Mishnah, that the Madir, who had imposed a vow, declares it unowned, the Mudar picks it up and eats it, and Rabbi Yossi says it's not allowed. Omer Rabbi Yossi, Amosai, when do I prohibit? Bizman shenidroi koidem lehefkero. That's when the neder was made, before the declaration of Hefker, before that declaration of non-ownership. Avalim hoyo hefkero kedem lenidro, if the declaration of Hefker was made prior to the vow. And do notice that we're at the top line of Omid Beis right now, that if the Hefker, the item, was declared unowned, the food that was put on that rock was declared unowned before the vow was ever made, Hareze Mutter, then it would be allowed for the eventual Mudar to take that. If you're going to accept the principle that Rabbi Yochanan maintained, that Hefker works like Matona, that it doesn't leave the possession of the original owner until the Zoche, until the receiver takes it into his own possession. Mali Nidroi Kodem Hefkero, Mali Hefkero Kodem Lenidro. What difference does it make in terms of order of events? Even in what you suggested would be the heter, the allowed scenario, where the hefker was declared before the neder, but the hefker doesn't really take hold until the receiver takes the item. In that case, when is the receiver taking the item? After the neder already was imposed. So why should that be mutter if hefker is like matana? So again, the receiver is as it's as if he's taking it directly from the matir, because the hefker doesn't take hold until he, the receiver of the item, takes possession of it. Who moisiv law v'hu mishani law? Rabbi Abba raised the question, but he also answers it. Kol hanoder ein daito alma shehifkir. When a person imposes a vow, his intention covers only those things that are in his, that he, or let us say, when a person declares a vow, his mind is not on things that he had declared Hefker. So that, in though technically speaking, the Hefker doesn't maybe take effect, but the vow never covered that item that was put on the rock anyway. So that's why it's mutter. So that as far as the realm of nidorim are concerned, the realm of vows and prohibitions that result therefrom, the item that was placed on the rock and declared unowned, and only later the neder was made, the neder never affected that. Mosiv Rava. We have now a Tanaic source. It's very brief as far as the quote in this Gemara, but it reflects a sugya, a topic in Maseches Bava Basra. We have a person that's deathly ill. He's called a Shchiv Meira. And he is giving away his property. So let's just say a general rule. If a person is deathly ill and he distributes or he gives away to, let's say, to one person all of his property, and then that person gets better. You could say he miraculously got better. It wasn't anticipated. The gift that the Shchiv Meira gave is canceled, is off, because when you see a person giving away all his property in the context of an illness, it's only because he's anticipating death. But if he recuperates beforehand, so then the gift is off. However, a person who's deathly ill, who gives someone part of his property, not everything, and when he gives the gift, he's keeping for himself some things. Would you say that he's giving the gift out of concern or worry of his impending death? If that were the case, why did he keep other items for himself? Person, as you know, doesn't take anything with him other than his his mitzvahs and his meisim tovim to the grave. So why was he keeping other things? So in such a case, a person who is deathly ill, who gives only part of his possessions to someone and then gets better, that gift is maintained. It's not overturned. It's not undone as a result of his recuperation. Now we have a Tanaic source that features a shchiv meira, person deathly ill, and we read in the Gemara, miktsasan l'rishon v'kulin l'sheni. He gave part of his possessions to Mr. A, and the balance, the word kulon, it means all of it, but in this case it means, and the rest of his property to Mr. B. Rishon kona sheni loy kona. In the event that the shchiv meira gets better, so the first one, Mr. A, he keeps whatever he got. Mr. B does not keep, because when Mr. B was assigned the gift, that represented everything that was left in the possession of that shchiv meira. And as we said, when someone gives away his last item in a state of, morbid illness, so the gift is undone, is overturned when he gets better. But now, we heard a rule in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that gifts take hold only when they reach the hand of the receiver. We take a look at the Rashi, Rishon Kono Sheni Lo Kono, in the middle of the narrow lines, Vimomad, and if the owner gets better, Choser B'Sheni V'Enu Choser B'Rishon, the second party gift is reversed, and not the first party. The fee shikashikosav l'rishon shir le'atzmon, when he gave over properties to the first person, to Mr. A, he kept some for himself. What did he keep for himself? Whatever he gave afterwards to Mr. B, at the point that he gave what he did to Mr. A, that represented items that he kept for himself. The gift, though, given to Mr. B, is reversed because the original owner didn't leave for himself anything. And that's why Mr. B doesn't acquire. If you're going to say, as the rule was suggested, that a matona doesn't take hold until it reaches the hand of the receiver, why does the first guy get his gift any more than the second guy? Since it didn't reach his hands, lo havi shelo, doesn't belong to him. And just like the gift given to the second one is considered considered that which was left over vis-a-vis the gift to the first one. And it's for that reason you say that the gift given to the first one is a real gift, because it wasn't the last ounce of property. You can say by the same token that the properties given to the Rishon were like a shiur vis-a-vis that which was given to the Sheni. That when the Sheni heard his gift being announced, it really wasn't the last ounce of properties owned by the original owner. There was the stuff that the fellow had dedicated to the first guy. It's not considered a gift as long as it hasn't reached the hands of the receiver. From the fact that the first guy does keep the gift, even though he didn't take actual possession of it, therefore Rabbi Yochanan's principle falls away. That he described a gift is not considered a gift until it gets to the hands of the receiver. Well, if you're going to undo Rabbi Yochanan's principle, then you're dismissing his explanation of Rabbi Yossi, and therefore Rava, who just asked the question, comes up with his explanation, and that's what we see as the Gemara goes on. Elo Omar Rova Hainu Taimo de Rabbi Yossi Gzeira Mishumatnas Beis Choron. Now, Matnas Beis Choron, you will see, is explained or touched upon by Rashi. But before we do the Rashi, let us just remind you or emphasize that we're dealing with Nidorim, we're dealing with a vow. And things that appear as a subterfuge, as an outright, we'll say, trick to get around the vow, that will be unacceptable. And don't compare what we just said, or what we just said, does not include the solutions that we saw in the Reisha of the Mishnah. But the case of Matnas Beis Choron appears to be a real subterfuge. But of course we don't know what it is yet, so we look together in the Rashi. Mishum Matnas Beis Choron in the wide lines, Kedisnan Bepirkin Lekamon, as is featured later in the Perek. In the next perek, the mukha milsa the lo nitna lechavero el bishvil shiav abba v'yoychal. In that particular case, you had a son. We're going to be talking about three generations. So you have a grandfather, a son, and a grandson. In the next story, the son was making a wedding for his grandson. For whatever reason, that son had made a vow that his father, i.e. the grandfather, cannot derive any benefit from the son. And behold, the son was making a wedding for the grandson. What is he to do? His father won't be able to attend and eat from the meal. So father of the groom, father of the son, who had made the vow, gives the entire catered meal to a friend, to an outsider. And he says, I'm giving you all of this. The entire catered meal is now yours. And we'll see more details about it later in the next perek. But he did so expressing his intent that with my giving you this gift, now my father will be able to partake of the meal, because he's partaking of food belonging to you and not belonging to me. So we said that it's so obvious that the gift there was a mere subterfuge. So all things that could lead to that are also going to be prohibited. So the Rashi goes on. The Hochanami, so too here in our case, Yamrinon Havi Hefker, if we say that the declared Hefker is effective, in the case in our Mishnah where the fellow walking along with him had nothing to eat and the Madir put the food down on a rock and declared it unowned, if we're going to say that that's effective, Kevon the Ein Shom Acher, since there is no one else around, it looks like the only reason there was a declaration of the Hefker was because of the Mudr, in order for the Mudr to benefit. And that is very similar to the Beis Choron case. Beis Choron is the name of a place. And that the story that we described before, where the entire gift was given, not as an outright gift, but a gift to the outsider in order for the father, for the grandfather to come and partake of the meal. Hilkoch. Omar Rabbonon. Ukminon ad Rabbonon. Delo have Hefker. And therefore, even though on a Torah level, the Hefker does take effect immediately, on a rabbinic level, we say that the Hefker will not take effect until it gets to the hands of the receiver. So that Rabbi Yossi, what's motivating Rabbi Yossi is a rabbinic consideration. And that's why he doesn't allow the hefker food placed on the rock to be used by the mudar. So that as we go through the Gemara, we're going to have to keep in mind the we'll call it the levels. Was it Doraisa or Dorabonan? This issue of when and how the Hefker is chal. When does it take place? Is the Hefker something that takes place immediately? That would seem to be, according to Rabbi Yossi, on a Doraisa level, it would take place immediately, but on a Dorabonan level, no. And according to the Tanakama, who did allow the rock Hefker method to enable the mudor to get the food, it's because the Hefker works immediately. He doesn't make the gzera, restriction in anticipation of the of a case like the Matnas Beis Chorom. Tanya, we now present a Tanaic source, and as we go along the Gemara, after reading the Tanaic source, which continues to the beginning of the fifth line from the top of Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, the Gemara will then present, we'll say, three different approaches in how to explain this Tanaic source. This Tanaic source will touch on laws concerning hafroshes of Trumas and Maisrus, the laws of tithing produce. And now, as a general principle, produce that one gathers from hefker, from something that is unowned, there is no tithing obligation. That's a general rule. The nosei, the topic heading that you see on the side of the Gemara, Mosai Chal Hefker. When does Hefker set in? Miyad Okshmagia Lidei Hazoche. Or when it reaches the hands of the one acquiring it. So now we have a source, Tanya. We also break the source down into the Resha and the Seifa. The Resha, the beginning of the source, says, Hamafkir es sodehu, someone who declares his field unowned. Kol shloish yomim yochol lachzor boi. For the first 3 days, he can back out. In other words, for the first 3 days, the Shem Hefker, the classification of this field as being unowned, does not set in. And as we said, the legal ramifications of the Shem Hefker being Chal is, will it be exempt from tithes or not? So during the first 3 days after the declaration of Hefker is made, it is not really Hefker. Mikan v'elech, from that point onwards, ein yochol lachzor bo. He cannot back out, and from that point on, from after 3 days, it is considered exempt from tithes. It's what we say. We say it's potter from the maestris. So the Gemara continues at the top of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. Omar, a person declared, Tehe sodezu mufkeres liyoyim echad, l'shabbos achas, l'chodesh echad, l'shona achas, l'shavua echad. He says, I want to declare this field hefker, but for a limited time period. The source gives a number of examples for 1 day, for Shabbos echad means 1 week, chodesh echad is 1 month, shona achas 1 year, shavua echad means 1 unit of 7 years. A unit of 7 years, it's called a Shavua, literally a week, but a week is made of 7 days, vis-a-vis the Shemitah cycle, which is a cycle that in which you know every seventh year is a sabbatical year, and at the end of 49 years, you have the Jubilee year. So this case speaks about, we'll call a time-limited Hefker declaration. What are the results? Ad sheloi zocha bo bein hu bein acher yochol lachzor bo. Until someone takes possession of it, whether it be the original owner who reclaims it or someone else, the hefker can be reversed. Misha zocha bo bein hu bein acher ein yochol lachzor bo. From the point that someone takes possession of it, so there's no reversal of the hefker. And what we see here, we see in the Resha that the hefker will take hold even without someone taking possession of it, just as long as 3 days go by. In the Sefer, we are given the impression that it's not Hefker until it gets to the Rishus, until it gets to the domain of the receiver. So there seems to be an inconsistency in determining when the Hefker sets in. The Rashi on the third line from the top says, Mishezochavah beinhu bein acher, afilu toich sho achas, Mishevkero zochavah shumodam, ohu ba'atzmo l'shum hefker, have a hefker. If after the declaration of the hefker, an hour goes by, even a moment goes by, from his declaration, and someone takes possession of it, or he himself takes it back with the idea that he's taking it from Hefker. It's Hefker. The Kosovar the lo have a Hefker ad osilush zeche. The opinion reflected in the Seifa is that it's not considered Hefker until it gets to the domain of the receiver, of the taker of it. Uzchiodite oidacher lo chashivo midi. The idea of taking possession is not said to be a reality until he does something physical to the field, the rafak beporta, until he tills it a little bit, as kinamar b'saches erevin, as it says in Maseches Erevin in Perek Oisin Pas. That's the name of the Perek, and Rashi gives the case in which that happened. But what we see, though, is, as we said, in this Tanaic source, a seeming, I don't know, call it a contradiction or inconsistency, what appears to be as if there are two different opinions. So you know what? The Gemara says, and here on the side we have the Mivneh, the structural note, and we indicate that this note will be binding, or be of interest to us, till Daf Mem Hei. These are Gimel Shitos, Eich Liashev Reisha de Braisa, de Mashma de Hefker Chal Gam Im Lo Higil Idei Hazoicheh, Im Haseifa de Mashma de Hefker Chal Rakishim Agil Idei Hazoicheh. How do we resolve the Reisha, which implies that Hefker takes hold even without reaching the hands of a receiver, of a taker, of a claimer, and the Seifa, which says the Hefker does not set in until it reaches the hands of a claimer? So, you know, the Gemara continues. It says, Reisha Rabbonan Seifa Rabbi Yossi. This is approach number one. The Reisha is the Rabbonan. The Rabbonan we saw in our Mishnah, that the Madir, who declared the food unowned, places it on a rock. The Mudar can take it. Why is the Mudar able to take it? Because the Hefker was Chal immediately, even without someone taking it, even without someone taking possession of it. So that in this Tanaic source, where we have the ratio saying that the Hefker takes place without someone actually taking possession, if that's the opinion, the Tanaic opinion of the Rabbonin, the Seifa, that reflects Rabbi Yossi. What did Rabbi Yossi say? That the Hefker, the declaration of Hefker, does not enable the Mudar to take it. Why not? Because it's the Mudar's taking of it that establishes the name, the Shem Hefker. And if that be the case, at the moment that the receiver, that the Mudar was taking it, it's as if he's taking it from the Madir. That the Shem Hefker simply did not get activated until someone received it. That's Rabbi Yossi, and that's what the Seif of this source seems to say. Omar Ula. Now a second approach. Seifa Nami Rabbonon. The Seifa of this Tanaic source can conform to the approach taken by the Rabbonin in our Mishnah. Ihochi, if that's the case, amai, if the Seifa is according to the Rabbonin that seem to hold the Hefker is a reality even without someone picking it up. So amai, why in the Seifa does it say, ad sheloi zocha bo, bein hu, bein acher, yochol lachzor boy. That until it's picked up, until it's taken, the original owner can back out. What do you mean? When we say back out, it means back out, and it never became Hefker, because no one had received it. So Ula, he answers, Shaini Shana V'Shavua, the example of the Seifa was a hefker that was a limited time hefker from the outset. It wasn't a hefker with, let's say, full broad sweeping hefker intentions. It was declared hefker, but for a limited time. So it's unusual. And now we look together in the Rush commentary. You'll see the Rush commentary in the lower part of the narrow lines. V'shaini hefker lizman deloshkeach, the case featured in the Seifa, which was a time-based hefker, which is not common. Hilkoch havi hefker gorua. It's therefore considered something called a weak hefker. Kevon shalef gerili oylam, since it wasn't declared unowned permanently. Umodu rabbanan behal, the rabbanan will concede in this case, shalo gomar badaitishi hefker adam. He didn't conclude in his mind, or he didn't dedicate himself to the hefker proposition until someone would take hold of it. You can see that he thinks that no one, he's entertaining the thought that maybe no one will take it, and he'll be able to reclaim it, and thereby reversing the hefker status. Now we continue in the Gemara. Reish Lakish Omar, Midaseifa Rabbi Yossi. Reish Lakish emphasizes the Seifa as establishing who the author is. And from the fact that you see in the Seifa, there is no hefker until someone actually takes it, which would reflect the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. So Reish Onami Rabbi Yossi, the Reish must thereby also be Rabbi Yossi. The idea of a Tanaic source being, split authored is not something that we generally like, and you saw Ula also felt that way. So, according to Reish Lakish, the Reisha is also in accordance with Rabbi Yossi. Well, if that's the case, why then after 3 days does the Hefker status kick in? No one took it yet. The Reisha Hainu Taimo. And the Reisha, the reason that it's considered Hefker, even though it didn't get to someone else's possession, the Lolishtakach Toras Hefker. So that the concept of Hefker should not be forgotten. And as we said before, the concept of Hefker has ramifications in many areas of Halacha, and specifically here with regard to laws of tithing. The Gemara asks, if what's motivating Rabbi Yossi and the Reisha is so that people don't forget the rules of Hefker, and they should see that the Hefker is something that exists, and therefore it will set in automatically after 3 days, why not have it immediately? So then, even at the first day, it should be considered hefker. If you're dealing here with a rabbinic consideration, namely on a Torah level, it's really not hefker until someone picks it up. But on a rabbinic level, it becomes hefker so that people don't forget the rules or the concept of hefker. So then even on the first day, it should be hefker. Omar Rabbo answers, he says, Mishmipnei Horamoyin. The Mafkirin Vahadrin Bahoin. We're concerned with people that practice subterfuge, or, if you will, fakers, people that, in this case, want to get around, they want to avoid the obligation of tithing. So, what would they do? They'll declare their field unowned, and as we said, something that's hefker is not subject to the laws of tithing, and then he'll immediately reverse himself and take the field back, saying, oh, I'm taking this from hefker, and thereby trying to avoid tithing. So, we say, listen, buddy, you declared it hefker, and yes, we're concerned that people don't forget the rules of hefker, but it's not going to be hefker until 3 days pass. And since there's this this was a long wait for the Hefker to set in, the Ramoyan, the charlatans, are not going to do what we suspect them of having done had the Hefker been set in after one day. Avol d'oraisa lo have a Hefker, but on a Torah level, the field featured in the source is not Hefker. And if the field is not Hefker on a Torah level, that means that midoraisa there is the need for tithing. What I would like to do before we go further in the Gemara is go over the Rashi commentary on a number of points. The Rashi that we're going to be looking at is in the wide lines, almost halfway down, where he says, Reishonami, referring to Reish Lakish's explanation of the Tanaic source, just like the Seifa, which says that it's not Hefker until it gets into the possession of the receiver, the Reish is also in accordance with Rabbi Yossi. So Rashi says, Reishonami b'soich shloisha, uliachar shloisha, that time demarcation of within 3 days and after 3 days, Rabbi Yossi hi. This is in accordance with Rabbi Yossi. The Reisha hainu tam delachar shloshiyom imen yochol lapsavoi, to have a Hefker. And the ratio, you want to know why after 3 days he can't back out, and it really it becomes hefker. Even though it didn't get into the hands of a receiver yet, mishum de lo nishtakach toras hefker. The midaraisa vaday lo have a hefker. As we emphasized before, that on a Torah level, it certainly is not hefker until it gets to the hands of someone claiming it. And as long as no one came along and claimed it, it would be considered not hefker, and therefore it's obligated in tithes, truman meiser. And that which the Rabbanan said, it becomes hefker after 3 days. Their intention wasn't to exempt it from trumas and meisers, to give him the reis chayav. The Lav Hefker, since on a Torah level it's obligated, it's not Hefker, because it didn't get to anyone's hands after 3 days yet. Lo Mifki, the Rabbanan Mitruma Meiser, the Rabbanan can't come and declare it exempt from the tithes. The Lav Kol Kamina, it's not within their power. Elo Kadei Shelo Tishdakav Tars Hefker. Rather, what they try to accomplish. With their rule is that the rules of Hefker should not be forgotten. However, with regard to the limited time Hefker, since those are not regular cases, not common cases, since it's an unusual, it's an uncommon situation, the Rabbanan did not impose their concern of Shalot Tishdakach Toras Hefker in that case. And therefore, in the Seifa, you're dealing with the laws of Hefker in their raw form, that it's not Hefker until someone takes possession of it. The Rashi continues, Ihachi afilu miyom rishon levi Hefker, kedei Shalot Tishdakach, if the concern of the Rabbanon is that it's considered Hefker so that we don't forget the concept of Hefker, so that even after one day, Omar Rabba, so Rabba answered, Bedin hu de levi Hefker, mid Rabbanon, in truth, you're right, that it should be considered Hefker, rabbinically speaking, even after one day, Elomim, Ne'er Ramoyin, de boy lafguish, sedoisa mitrumu meiser, v'afkirulahu. But we're concerned with the charlatans that will declare it Hefker and then take it back immediately in order to avoid tithing. If you were to say that it becomes Hefker immediately and exempted from Meiser, Hadri Umasibuhu, they'll just take it right back after they declared it Hefker, Vadahochi, and as a result of this, Kol Shloshi Yomim, Lo Havi Hefker Lagabi Ihu. We say that for the first 3 days, vis-a-vis the original owner, it's not considered Hefker. The Savri, mitoch kach, osi achir umachzik behu. The owner will figure, well, I declared it Hefker, someone else might come along and take hold of it. Vavi delay, and it'll be then his. This is what people will think. That will dissuade the charlatans from declaring it hefker. And after all said and done, on a Torah level, even after 3 days, it's not considered hefker until it gets to the hands of a receiver. So now, what have we established? What has Rish Lakish established for us? And that is that according to Rabbi Yossi, out of concern, Shalotishkakach Torah's hefker, something will be considered hefker even after 3 days. It will be considered hefker after 3 days, even though no one took possession of it. So what do we have then? We have a field that technically, on a deraisa level, is obligated in being tithed. Midrabbanan, on a rabbinic level, it has a label of hefker. And with that label, people could get the impression that it's not obligated at being tithed. That drives the Gemara to raise the next question, and we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Mem Dalet Omid Beis. The Dilma Osi Lasuri. Asuri is the verb of tithing. Might this not create a problem that people will come to tithe min achiyuv al hapoter u min hapoter al achiyuv? Let's immediately look at the Rosh commentary. The Dilma Osir Asuri min achiyuv al hapoter v'chule. The Kevon de Amrin. Since you said midoraisa lo havi hefker, elo midorabona shelo tishtakach teres hefker. Since you said that after 3 days, on a Torah level, it's really not hefker. It's totally obligated in tithing. On a rabbinic level, we're labeling it as hefker. Ava midoraisa lo havi hefker. And therefore, it's definitely obligated in being tithed. Should we not suspect the following? Nechush dilma osil asuri v'chulei. He might come to use produce from that field, which is obligated on a Torah level, to exempt produce that is growing, let us say, in an unhulled flower pot. Produce growing in an unhulled flower pot is something that is we will tithe only rabbinically, but on a Torah level it doesn't need to be tithed. So what we just described is the taking of produce that itself needs to be tithed on a Torah level and being declared as a tithe for something that doesn't need to be tithed. That's called min achiyuv al hapoter, and then that would be given to a kohen. But there's a problem. What the Kohen is receiving is in effect something that it itself hasn't been tithed, and it needs to be tithed. So the Kohen would be eating tevel. The Kohen who receives the trumor, the Levi who receives the meiser, will be eating something that hasn't been tithed. It was used to exempt something that doesn't need to be exempted in the first place on a Torah level. So is that not a problem? Or someone might take produce from a flower pot that doesn't have a hole in it, an unholed flower pot, which is something that is, we say, potter on a Torah level, and he'll use that produce to exempt the produce growing in the field. That's called min ha-potter al achiyuv. What will the result be? The result will be that the owner will consume produce from that field, thinking that it was tithed when it wasn't tithed. And the Rosh goes on where we left off. Ki hu savur shuhu hefker gomor, by the rabbis imposing the label of hefker on this field after 3 days, the commoner will think that it's total hefker. And v'osi lasuri minei alotzit sheino nokuv, and he'll use produce from the field to exempt produce growing in an unholed flower pot. Umachil tevel lekayin, and he'll then, that which he gives to the Kohen will be in effect something that it itself hasn't been tithed, and he's going to be giving teva, which is which is untied produce, which represents a serious offense if one eats it. Or someone might take from an unwhole flower pot to exempt the field. And then the owner, when he does eat from his field, will be eating stuff that's really not tithe, because the flower pot that was not whole is something that cannot be used to tithe when it itself doesn't need to be tithe on a Torah level. So you have this disparity, the Torah level versus rabbinic level. So this practice, is it not going to lead to this kind of problem? So the Gemara answers on the second line from the top of Omid Beis. The Gemara says, the Amrinon Le, we tell the person who had declared the field Hefker, and after 3 days we say that the shame Hefker sets in, we say that Kima Asris, when you do tithe from it, Aser Mine Ube, take the tithe from within, from the field itself. Don't use it to exempt something else, and don't try to exempt the field with produce taken from an outside source. So that it has its own status. The Gemara now raises a question. Notice that it's a question that lasts a number of lines. Meisvei, hamafkiras karmoi. Someone declares his vineyard unowned. Uleshachar, the next morning, omad, ubotzro, he goes and harvests it. Chayev beperedu ba'ululoisu b'shikcho b'peya. He's obligated in leaving these tithes for the poor. We don't have to get into the details, but their names are Pered Oilu Shikha and Peah, Upoter Min HaMeiser. This is what we want to emphasize. There is an exemption from the Meiser tithing. Trumas and Meisers need not be tithed. As far as why the other tithes are binding, so that's a result of what we'll call Exeris HaKosuv, that we don't have to get into right now. There's a scriptural basis for that. But it says here that there's an exemption from Meiser. Rashi, in the wide line, says, "Upotim and a Meiser, the Chashvinon le Hefker, it's considered Hefker. He declared it Hefker the day before. It's considered Hefker, and therefore Hefker is exempt. Vadohochi, Mechayev, Bahani, Tfei, Mi Meiser, Sibutaz of Yisrael." This is what we referred to before regarding the other tithes, the Lech Shechopeah, and the oilulus, there is obligation because there's an extra word ta'azov written in the Torah. And Rashi then goes on and gives you the sources for that. Now, let's go on in the Gemara and see what is the problem here. Bishlamo le'ula, this source does not pose a problem for Ula. Derabonon kotoni lo, deraisa kotoni lo, this source is the Shita of the Rabbonan, and don't forget, Ula was the second diamond on Omen Aleph that said that the entire Tanaic source that we had been discussing before, that entire source was in accordance with the opinion of the Rabbonan. So this, too, is in accordance with the opinion of the Rabbonan, who said that Hefker takes hold even without someone taking possession of it. And the idea of waiting 3 days was a rabbinic consideration because of the charlatans. However, this source, Udaraisa Kotoni Law, means this source is teaching the law on a strictly Torah level. And on a strictly Torah level, the Hefker sets in upon its declaration as Hefker without needing someone else to take possession of it. But according to Reish Lakish, who had explained the previous Tanaic source in accordance with Shitas Rabbi Yossi, and Shitas Rabbi Yossi says that it's not Hefker until someone takes possession of it. Well, here, no one else came along to take possession of it. The owner himself simply took it right back. He simply went and harvested his own field, the field that he had declared Hefker, but it wasn't someone else coming to take possession of it. It wasn't some outsider taking possession of it. And therefore, the question is, why is there an exemption from Maestris? Omar Loch. So Reish Lakish will tell you, Ki Amri Ano L'Rabbi Yossi. All of that which I said before was within the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. In other words, we had a Tanaic source, and we had a Reish and a Seifa that didn't seem to be consistent with one another, and Reish Lakish explained that source in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Ha Rabbonani, this source is not Rabbi Yossi. This source is the opposing rabbinic opinion, opinion of the Rabbonan. And what do the Rabbonan hold? That it's Hefker immediately, and therefore, when this fellow declared his vineyard unowned, it became unowned. And the next morning, he came and harvested, and he was harvesting a field that is Hefker, and as a result, it is exempt from Maestris. So the Gemara continues at the top of Mem Hey Omid Aleph. E Boyas Ema, another approach. Ha the Afkere Ba'anpi train, Vaha the Afkere Ba'api Tlosa. Let's translate first. One instance is where the Hefker was declared in front of two people, and the other instance is where the Hefker was declared in front of three people. Now, let's explain further. We have spoken about a machlokus between Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbonan. That is true. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbonan, they argued about the effectiveness of a declared Hefker. At what point does it take effect? But that is in a case where the Hefker was declared thusly in the presence of two. The source that says, that we just read, Potrim and Amaiser, the source in the middle of Mandal and Bays, that it's the vineyard is Hefker upon his declaration of it, and the next morning when he comes and harvests, he's really exempt from tithing. That is something that there's no argument about, because there the Hefker was declared in the presence of three people. And even according to Rabbi Yossi, it will be full-fledged Hefker, even if it didn't get to the hands of the receiver. So that this source of Hamafkir's Kamer L'Shachar Omar Batzroi does not pose a problem for Reish Lakish. All that Reish Lakish had explained, that the Hefker does not set in until someone takes hold of it, that is something, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, who argues with the Rabbonan, but that's because the Hefker was declared in front of two. The source of Amafkir's Karmelu, and which resulted in Potter and Amaiser, that's where the Hefker had been declared, in front of three. The Gemara continues, the Omer Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yehot Sadok. Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, said, "Call Hamafkir b'fnei shloisha vihefker b'fnei shnayim lo havihefker." Anyone who declares something unowned in the presence of three, that is hefker. In the presence of two, that is not hefker. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omar Devar Torah filu b'echod havihefker. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, he argues with the standards that we just heard, and he says that on a Torah level, even in front of one, it will be considered Hefker. And it's Hefker immediately, even without getting into the hands of the receiver. Umatam Omru Bishlosha, why then was the idea of Hefker being Hefker in front of three ever said? What's the purpose of three? What do we benefit by having three? Kedei she echod zeche ushnayim meidim. The Hefker declared in the presence of three simply sets up a situation that's very convenient if any challenge would arise later. In front of three, you create a situation where you have one person that will take possession of it, and two people that can serve as witnesses. And this we can see explained a little bit further in Rashi. Umatam omru ushnayim idim de ileko el atrei, if there are only two people when you're declaring it hefker, kizochi chad, when one takes possession of it, man meid ole de halo hefker, who will serve as witness that it was declared hefker, uli ulum la altravi hefker, And in general, though, it's a hefker immediately, v'hainu kirabonan. This explanation of Reb Shimon Levi, as Rashi interprets it, is Reb Shimon Levi saying that they were stating a law within the opinion of the Rabbanan. The Reb Yehoshua ben Levi svira leik Rabbanan. Reb Shimon Levi accepts the Rabbanan that hefker is something that can take place immediately. And now, as you can see, with this we have reached the end of the perek. And before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.